I am Hawk Newsom. I am a liberator. I am the president of Black Lives Matter New York. I am a black man in a country ran and owned by racist white people. I am a servant of God. I am a servant of humanity. I seek to liberate all of the oppressed people here in our country and abroad. And let's do this one more time. And you're on.
Race, violence, and medicine. Go ahead.
And you're listening to Race, Violence, and Medicine.
All right, let's do this. All right, welcome to Race, Violence, and Medicine. I'm Dr. Brian H. Williams. Thank you for joining me today. And today we have a special guest. We are sitting here with Hawk Newsom. He is a president of Black Lives Matter New York. He has a storied career. He dropped out of high school, eventually earned his GED, and then went to law school. He has been, you know, active in the civil rights movement throughout all that time. Now a nationally recognized leader who is doing everything he can to advance the lives of certainly black people, but any oppressed individuals that live within this country. So Hawk, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Doc. I really appreciate it.
All right, I guess first I need to let them listening that you and I are both working on the board for One America, so that may be perceived as a conflict of interest. But since we're not really selling anything other than societal change, I mean, I think that's okay that we're sitting here together.
What else is there to sell?
Exactly. So let's just start. I mean, I kind of gave the brief summary of your history, but why don't you fill in the gaps there or anything I overlooked, like where you came from, you know, Little Hawk to now president of Black Lives Matter New York.
I was born on April 4th, 1977. April 4th is the day that Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated in a different year. It was also the day that Adam Clayton Powell Jr. died, both huge civil rights activists. And also the day that Maya Angelou was born. So you'd say that my birthday has a historical significance. My parents met at a civil rights rally. I was raised in a very pro-black household. So this... People ask me, like, when did you get involved in a movement? I was born into it. I feel like I'm walking the path that God put me on.
Right. So talk to what, I mean, you did some work as an attorney for a while. What were you doing during that period?
I actually never practiced.
Never practiced.
I graduated from law school, ran for office, and...
What office did you run for?
I ran for city council in the Bronx, but I was a bit too radical for people. I was exposing them to truths that are now just becoming popular.
Right.
And I was talking about this stuff in 2012 about how the Democrats aren't necessarily doing what's in the best interest of poor people. They're not as bad as the Republicans, but they are great. And people just couldn't believe that type of message. I've been known for saying things and doing things that would shock people. But I guess it's kind of become my calling card.
Right.
Yeah.
So I first met you at the Listen First Project in Charlottesville. I guess it was back in April,
mm-hmm.
which was in response to the Charlottesville riots or massacre that occurred the prior fall. And I listened to you talk and part of that panel, and I was really drawn in by some of the things that you were saying. And it's difficult for people to hear these things, but it's nobody can call you a liar.
No.
Right, right.
No.
So why don't you talk to us about...
One term that people never want to hear is white supremacy. And they never want to hear how corporations and politicians and institutions like the police department perpetuate white supremacy. And the problem is, as a society, we throw the baby out with the bathwater. So they feel as though if you criticize the police, then you hate cops and you want all of them dead, which is not the truth. What I want is the way that policing is carried out in our country to be systematically changed. This is what I advocate for. I advocate for the liberation of black people. When I talk about oppressed people, the first words that you will hear out of my mouth are black people. But what I see in politics and what I see is in black people is we're always apologizing for asserting our rights. So they'll say something like, you know, in blacks, but you know, I care about Muslims, I care about immigrants, I care about poor white people too. And I do it too, but we have to come to a place where we assert our rights and let that stand alone. Yes, we fight for everyone, but it's all right for us to say it's time for black people to be liberated, and this is my sole purpose in life, and not have a problem with that.
So that's a good point there. There's a mentality that we must be apologetic for wanting to ask to just be recognized for the gifts that we have and the contributions that we can make, but you've pushed through that barrier without any difficulties. Now, you said you were born into the movement. How do you share that sort of confidence and, I don't know, liberation with folks that may not, and other black folks mm-hmm. that may not want to do that?
I have this theory that there are many lanes in this quest for liberation. You have people who work in finance, you have lawyers, you have doctors who aren't, you know, like yourself, willing to risk it and just say, hey, I stand up for what's right, I stand up for social justice. But I say to them that there are many lanes. There are many lanes. You could help in other ways. You're in finance, you could teach financial literacy. You're a doctor, you could promote better health in our communities. That was a strong, solid platform in the Black Panther Party. There's just so many different ways. You know, you have organizational skills. You can help out there. You have, you're good with your hands. You're a plumber, an engineer. You can go back to the neighborhood and teach people. Everybody doesn't have to know what you're doing for you to be helping, you know. I study the Bible. I also study Sun Tzu and Machiavelli. And I don't believe that these oppressors, the enemy, make no mistake about it, the people who oppress us are our enemy. We just so happen to come from a place of love, and that's why I think our love will defeat their hate. But the enemy is very deceptive. They will say things like, they're good people on both sides of the conflict in Charlottesville. Or they'll promote legislation that harms black and brown people. But at the same time, they'll say, I'm not racist. You know, that's deceptive at its core. So for you to be helping push this movement ahead, you could just put on a mask and say, hey, I'm just working with kids in the community, and that's fine. Everyone doesn't have to be on the front lines getting pepper sprayed and beat by police. I'm not asking everyone to do that. The ones that are strong enough, I say yes, but it takes a little bit to help your people, and that will go so far. Most people spend, I looked at my phone and in a week I spent like 10 hours, 11 hours on Instagram. I don't think I'm that different than anyone else when it comes to playing around on social media. What if you took 2 hours and put that into your community, into your people? That would help.
Right. So, okay, we're here on the One American Board. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, evangelical ministers, or evangelical faith leaders, I should say, Jewish, Muslim, black, white, and you bring a unique perspective to this board, mm-hmm. and it's pretty well accepted here. But out there in the real world, there's people that are just going to, you start talking, they're going to just shut down. How do you get through to get your message through to them?
I've done things that showed I am, how can I put it, capable of negotiating. All right, I believe that world powers always negotiate. When there's a world war, there are alliances formed between countries that did not like each other. Or when the heat is up, people come together when they have a common enemy. So I will work with other people. There was an amendment in Florida that just passed when Andrew Gillum was up for election. We don't know how that campaign is going to turn out. But the Fourth Amendment, which gave universal voting rights to people who were formerly incarcerated, I called Republican influencers and said, hey, we need your help on this. Do you believe that people who serve their time deserve the right to vote? They said yes. I said, well, spread this word to your people. And they did. And that vote was passed. It was like 60-something percent of the people that voted. That means Democrats and Republicans came together. Now, for a lot of people in the Black Lives Matter movement, they'll be like, oh, you're a sellout. I say, oh, you're a fool. You know, you think you're going to get somewhere by yourself without any alliances. What people have to believe is, for us to work together, just like one America, we don't believe that everyone has to agree with everything we're saying. However, where we agree, we should move along and be prosperous and be productive. And that's the way to a brighter future.
So can you give an example of one issue that you think we can agree on and move forward, or something that you've worked on?
Okay. There's a law that we have called Andrews Law. We're hashtagging it, hashtag Andrews Law.
That's a federal law?
No, this is a state. If we can make it federal, Okay. Federal, it would be spectacular. Andrew Kearse died in the back of a police car. Andrew was not Rosa Parks. He was not a saint. Andrew Kearse was a criminal who had served time for some pretty nasty stuff. On this particular day, he ran from the police. Mm-hmm. But when he was put in the back of the police car, he said to that officer, I can't breathe. Officer, help. Officer just begged 70 times. He begged for help in 17 minutes. No one deserves to die like that. So what we're saying is, anytime someone says, I can't breathe, like Eric Garner, or I don't feel well, if they're in custody or if they're being arrested, then those officers have to call for help. Everybody believes that people should be able to live, right? That cops are not doctors like yourself, right? And they should call upon doctors or emergency services when a person is ill. We saw the same thing with Eric Garner. And get this, brother. They both said, I can't breathe 11 times. A man named David Dungay in Australia, I was out there working with his family earlier this summer. He said, I can't breathe 11 times. Could you imagine? Three different people, two in New York State, one all the way in Bombay in a jail in Australia. All three of them said, I can't breathe 11 times. I feel like there's something biblical in that, and we have to figure out what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to take a break here. I told you that Hawk here is pretty active in the movement. You may have heard in the background, his phone is blowing up with a few text messages. So we're going to take a break and let him check in and see what's going on with that. So you're listening to Race, Violence, and Medicine. Thank you for tuning in. This podcast, my main platform is Anchor FM, but you can get it anywhere you get your podcast. Please go ahead and share with your family and friends. Stick with us. We'll be back in a moment. Okay, welcome back to Race, Violence, and Medicine. Our guest today is Hawk Newsom. He is the president of Black Lives Matters New York. And man, his phone was just blowing up in the background. We're going to keep this segment going. We're going to get to that one in a minute.
I just want to explain. We are here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, working. And there are news channels that are coming to interview us. So my phone has to be on so I could meet these reporters and help us get this story out.
I'm going to miss out on that. I have to head back to the airport so I can get home, kiss my wife and daughter before it goes to bed. But anyway, I'm sorry to have to miss that. Talk to us about how you ascended to the presidency of Black Lives Matter New York.
It's a funny story. We started a campaign called I Ain't Voting Until Black Lives Matter. And immediately, I know some of you are put off like, what you mean you're not voting? Well, what we felt at the time was black people should withhold their votes until Hillary Clinton came to us, presented a platform that actually benefited black people without the fluff, the usual fluff, something substantial. If you remember, Hillary Clinton had emails linked that said she was forbidden by her team from even saying the term Black Lives Matter. So we were trying to pressure her, but we also wanted the Republicans to know we're not voting for you either until you do something for us. And we went to Ohio to do that. So we went down there to protest. This is actually a really funny story. Nick Cannon got there at the end of the protest. So we pulled everybody around and had a press conference so that, you know, celebrity Nick Cannon, so that, you know, he could help us get this word out. He's a member of Black Lives Matter New York. And what Nick did was said what he said, and people were like, what? They're like, not voting? So this reporter from BBC reached out to me and was like, I want to interview you. And we were standing, we were staying at a friend's house in Ashtabula, Ohio, which is like an hour outside of Cleveland. And he barbecued for us, you know. Don't ask me how he had like 8-9 twin size mattresses in his shed, but he did. So we cleared out the dining room table and we ran mattresses from like the kitchen all the way to the living room, and there were like people spread out all over his house. And this reporter came in the morning. He took an Uber from Ohio, from Cleveland, all the way out to Ashtabula, and we sat in the backyard and we chopped it up. We just we talked about this campaign, I Ain't Voting. We talked about Black Lives Matter.
It's a BBC reporter.
A BBC reporter, yeah. BBC, I forget where he was from, but he was like there.
But not U.S. press. That was not a U.S.
It wasn't U.S. No. And he said, Black Lives Matter leader says, I ain't voting. I never called myself a leader. I was in other organizations that had great leaders, and I learned to serve them, right, and to play my role. And I was like, well, I made the call to get funding, got the vehicle, got all of the signs, the posters, everything. I brought the people together. I got the T-shirts. I assembled the team, and I brought them down to Ohio from New York. I guess I am a leader. I guess I am a leader. And this was in 2016. And shortly after we founded Black Lives Matter Greater New York. And, you know, I sat at the head of the table and really pulled a team together, a great team who works really hard. And, so I'm a leader. And then we just started getting a lot of press, right? We started getting a lot of press, and that's because we were just there, you know. Charlottesville front lines. There was a pro-Trump rally in D.C. where we were boycotting, protesting, and they called us up on stage. And I gave a speech that shocked a lot of people. It got 57 million views, right?
Yeah, I've seen that video. Can you summarize what you said?
Pretty much, I said we as Americans, when we see something broke, we mobilize and fix it. And we need to fix this criminal justice system. Anytime you can watch a man say, I can't breathe 11 times and nothing happens to the cop, we need to fix it. And I don't know, and I said, I'm a Christian. They went crazy. These are patriots, you know, Trump supporters. I said, and my Bible is no different than yours, where it says, love thy neighbor. And it doesn't say that that neighbor has to be from the continental United States of America. And it was received well by them. And it was like this weird come to Jesus type of moment where you had racists who were coming up crying and saying, I never thought I'd feel this way. It was like a weird experience. And I don't expect everybody to understand it. A lot of people in Black Lives Matter were like, you sell out. How could you?
Right.
But our objective, Black Lives Matter New York and the like-minded individuals who work with us in our coalitions are trying to create a climate in this country where racism does not exist. And that includes flipping some of those races, changing their opinions, and bringing them over to our side. That includes winning the support of the masses to say, hey, this is something that I could stand behind. So it was a strategic move, and it was hard. I mean, we paid for it. We caught a lot of flack. I had two members leave my group. It was tough. It was a tough situation to be in, but it took us to another level because of that speech is why we're sitting here together.
Right.
You know?
So is that the speech that Listen First saw that got you to go there?
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
So has there been any ongoing contact with people from that rally from the Trump sign?
There's one man. His name is Scott Adams. And he writes, you know, the political commentary, Dilbert, the comic? He writes Dilbert. And he's a Republican influencer. And he loves Donald Trump. You know, I don't know why, but he does. However, when we talk, it's trying to make each other understand where we come from. And we actually find points that we agree on, like that Fourth Amendment, right? And so this is good. It's a good thing for us. And so, yeah, that's a long-standing relationship. And Andrew, who runs One America, who's our leader in this organization, right. He actually found me through that, right? So it's having a lasting effect.
So how are you managing all your time? Like, you're doing a lot of things that are taking you crisscrossing around the country and still running your own organization.
Yeah.
How are you managing all that?
By the grace of God. If not for the grace of God, I don't know where I'd be. But I just find the energy. You know, I pray. I have my sister who's peeved at me because she watches my son when I'm on the road. Now, you have to understand, this woman went to Fordham University, Howard University, runs a consultancy, but she is the person who can handle my son, right? So this is a busy businesswoman who, you know, watches my son when I travel. My wife is with my daughter, and she gives me grief. She gives me grief. But her and my mom, they help me out, you know? So I have a strong support network and very understanding people around me.
So son and daughter, how old are they?
My son's 15 years old. He's nonverbal autistic. He lives with me, my wife, and my daughter. But when I travel, he goes uptown to my sister and my mom's.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And my daughter's 18 months. She's the boss. She runs him. She runs me. She runs her mother. Her name is Asada, named after the Black Panther that's in exile in Cuba.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a 7-year-old, so I know what it means when you say your daughter runs the household, runs your life.
Right on.
And when they know that, then she knows it too, you know. So I'm like, she's got me completely wrapped.
Of course.
So, like, what is one thing you hope to come out, that comes out of One America with your work that you're doing here?
I want to make the country, I want to build as many allies possible to say that racism against blacks, systemic racism against blacks, needs to be eradicated. And that's why I'm here. But at the same time, I'm working with other people on their causes. But what I want is liberation for black people. And I have some allies here. And they'll help out. And at the same time, we will build bridges that will help other oppressed groups in the world and help other people understand one another. So it's a divine purpose. That's why we're here in Oklahoma, where it's like -100 degrees. It's freezing, y'all. It's freezing.
Well, Hawk Newsom, thanks for your time. I appreciate it, brother.
Thank you, brother.
I'd like to keep talking, but I got to head to the airport.
You got to get to your boss.
But most importantly, how can our folks track you down later?
Okay. Twitter, @ Hawk, H-A-W-K, of New York. Instagram, Hawk.Newsom. You can follow me on Facebook, and that's I Am Hawk Newsom. Or you can email me, IamHawkNewsom@gmail.com. I'm here. Shit, I'm sorry. I can't curse. I was just doing so good. I was doing so good.
All right. I try to keep a clean show, but we're going to have this one time. We're going to have that one time slip through for Hawk Newsom. I will put all that information up on the website, so you can always check in to BrianWilliamsMD.com for all of that information. Again, thanks for joining us. Let your family and friends know that they can subscribe to Race, Violence, and Medicine anywhere they get their podcasts. If you're not into podcast apps, go to my website. You can listen to it there. And as always, send me your feedback. I look forward to making this show not a waste of your time. I always want to serve you, the listeners. I hope you enjoyed our show today. Hawk, once again, thanks for joining us. Well, this is the conclusion of our show for today. Thanks for tuning in.